This episode of Football 301, Matt Harmon joins me to preview free agency, more specifically the offensive free agents. We go position by position, talk about the big names that can get the big paydays, the guys in the middle, and some under the radar free agents that we wanted to talk about, some team fits. It was a deep, deep show. It was an XXL show, if I'm being honest. We also start the show with some news roundup. We got some trades, mostly involving the Texans. We got some cap casualties already rolling in. Very fun show with Matt. See you guys in a sec. Hello and welcome back to Football 301. I'm your host, Nate Tice. Very fun show today as we kind of take a little deep breath from the draft cycle to do free agency. That's right. This happens, free agency. I know the trade market's booming right now. We'll talk about a couple that happened on Monday, and we're just taking a deep breath from the combine, but stuff's starting to ramp up. We're getting to that tampering period with a illegal but legal signing period. It'll be very fun to preview. We're going to talk about offense today and all the positions and all the free agents, the big ones, I guess, relative big ones, and maybe some of the under the radar guys to keep an eye on to help me do that. My guy, just saw him again, just had several dinners with him, just had several steaks with him, had several espresso-affiliated drinks with him. Matt Harmon, how you doing today? Good to see you.
Good to see you too. Yeah, trying to get back on the normal sleep schedule, the normal eating schedule. So I would say we're probably about maybe 48 more hours away from operating at a full capacity, but I'm doing well. I'm excited to talk about free agency because it is I think it's an interesting crop this year, so it'll be fun to break down.
There's some under the radar guys. I actually have more fun when and on the old show I did, the Athletic show. It was the Kendrick Bourne Memorial Award. Because I think I brought him up a couple times and then it was like, okay, this is a little too niche, ha ha ha. And then Bill Belichick signed him for like a relatively decent deal. And I was like, see? So that's the one guy that always keeps in my mind is the Kendrick Bourne Memorial podcast.
Whenever you can align yourself with Bill Belichick's wide receiver scouting, that's always it.
Hey, gotta do it.
No, gotta do it. He's good as long as it's not a premium pick. As long as it is, he's actually, they were good with the under the radar guys, Edelman, Jacoby Myers, Kendrick Bourne, whatever. Like it was whenever they made big swings post Randy Moss, that didn't go so well.
Oh, you're not a fan of stiff Arizona State receivers, N'Keal Harry. I hype up, I know we're not supposed to talk about draft. We're not really talking draft today. Not that we're not supposed to. Anytime I hype up Denzel Boston returning punts, that's the other big guy that I remember that returned punts was N'Keal Harry. And I was just like, I always remember being like, that he's a big guy that returns punts. I mean, and so every time I talk about Denzel Boston, I'm like, okay, who's the last guy I talked about that did this? It was N'Keal Harry.
I think N'Keal Harry, I didn't chart that draft class because, you know, it was when I was between NFL and Yahoo, so I just didn't have like college film that year, so I just didn't chart that class. But he was the first like big receiver couldn't separate that I was like, yeah, that should be a big slot. I think he was the first one that was like on my radar in that way, and that just never materialized. But now it's like a pet project of mine every single year, like which one or two big dudes that can't get open on the outside should kick into the slot. So N'Keal Harry was the first one where I was like, this is definitely, he's got something to him, but it's not gonna work on the outside. And it actually just didn't work at all. And I'm pretty sure he was like a tight end on the Vikings roster most recently.
Yeah,
so that's what people tune in for.
I think maybe in the UFL as well. Yeah, exactly. N'Keal Harry. 5 minutes on N'Keal Harry as we're supposed to, as we're about to dive deep into free agents. Yeah, that was Jaden Higgins last year. That's the receiver power slot option. Mm-hmm. There's a couple this year we'll talk about. We have fun finding power slots. I think that might be one of our favorite kind of niche subjects to talk about, which X ends up being a power slot. Alec Pierce was one of those for me. But he's turned into everything and more, I think, on the outside. See that transition? See, he is one, a pending free agent who also has maybe some franchise tag questions. So we'll get into receivers and all the other positions, position by position of this free agency class. But we're going to do a quick news roundup because stuff happened. Not only were we getting back from the combine, NFL teams and decision makers were getting back from the combine. Well, some of them like to very proudly say, we don't send our coaches. And other teams go, we send our coaches. And then they both win games and they both decide that they're right. But we're going to talk about the Texans, who are very, very active. First, we'll start with, they traded for running back David Montgomery from the Lions for a fourth round pick, Juice Scruggs, and a seventh round selection. Juice Scruggs, who is he? It was a Penn State interior offensive lineman. I thought he was a center only. He ended up having to play guard because the Texans offensive line was just a travesty the last few years. And he is a center only, but what do the Lions need? They need a little interior offensive line depth. So I'm not saying he's great or anything, but he's okay. He's depth and he can play both guard spots and center. The Lions needed that. But of course, David Montgomery going to Houston, desperately needed, I thought, a vet running back that can actually pass protect, but also had a little bit more juice than the other vets that they had as maybe just the pass protection back. Woody Marks did his best job last year. I thought Woody Marks was a solid back, could do a little bit of everything well. I think Montgomery is a nice compliment. They don't have that high-end juice in that backfield, but they got a nice little solid 1-2 here that can protect, receive, run the ball. So I like this. But Matt, I'm curious, what'd you think about now Monty going to the Texans?
Yeah, Houston has ranked 31st in both rushing success rate and EPA since they drafted CJ Stroud. So they're like on an annual journey to try to fix this run game. Obviously, it was not going to be Joe Mixon when the GM says at his podium at the NFL Scouting Combine, we think he had surgery this offseason, quote, in some capacity. That means he ain't never going to play for this team ever again, is what that essentially means.
In some capacity.
More in some capacity, he has surgery. Maybe, we think. I don't know. So they trade for Dave Montgomery. Nick Caserio likes to do this, like look for a veteran back. You know, they've cycled like everybody that's been on your fantasy team 3 years ago that was really good. They've cycled everybody in that backfield in that regard. I think he does compliment Woody Marks well. I think they probably weren't going to be a big player. Maybe they probably shouldn't have been a big player for the Travis Etienne's, the Kenneth Walker. I think they wanted somebody who's a little bit more consistent, which is what Montgomery is. Yeah. And you know, I think Montgomery, obviously, it was pretty clear, and again, parsing GM speak, that he wanted out of Detroit, because Brad Holmes, every time he got in front of a microphone, would essentially like lay the groundwork for this, talking about, you know, quote, the player needs to want to be here, that sort of stuff. He kind of, again, was alluding to that. And it makes sense, too. When I talked to Dave Montgomery and Jahmyr Gibbs at the Super Bowl in New Orleans last year, Montgomery basically viewed them as like co-starters, that there wasn't I'm the power back, he's the lightning back. He viewed them much more interchangeable. Well, the coaching staff just completely disagreed with that this year. I mean, especially when Dan Campbell took over play calling, Gibbs handled 72% of the snaps, 69% of the running back touches. If you can't tell, I wrote a column about this. And Montgomery had 35% and 31% respectively. So like, yeah, he was clearly treated as a backup. In Houston, he'll get to be the starter. So I think it makes sense in that regard. But Houston definitely needs to get serious about their offensive line. I think they were 26th in yards before contact on their running back rushes. So we'll talk about another trade they made with the offensive line here in a second, but they're just, again, recycling through guys there. That's a bigger problem, I think, in the run game than their running back. But this is a nice first step, I think.
Yeah, one of the things too is this past year, or the travesty of the kind of the Bobby Slowick era, was that the pass protection was just so porous from rules and from everybody, from top down. And that's, I always look at, or not I always look at, but one of the indicators, a microcosm of what's going on, is how the running backs protect, as far as where they're going, where their eyes are going, whether they, because if you play are able to play fast mentally, you're able to play fast physically. And when you can anticipate that stuff, you can really help yourself out. So with the Texans, even with their offensive line kind of sort of shoring up last year, it's still like average at best, below average, which we'll get to a curious trade that they made as well, is that their running backs in protection were, I thought, were always just kind of the weakness. And they tried, like you said, they kind of had your fantasy football's greatest hits kind of going on. Like Nick Chubb has never been good in protection. As big as he is and everything, he's just not that. He's an early down back. He's always needed some guy to help him out with that, to take snaps away from him. All right, well, they didn't want to give the rookie that responsibility right away. Totally get it. But also the other guys that they've had there, Dare Ogunbowale, who's a Wisconsin Badger, has been on this roster for forever. And it's just because he can pass protect. And he was the only guy that they could trust. But he has no juice as a receiver or any of that, or even on draws or anything. So they just kind of need to merge both worlds. And that's what Montgomery does. Like, I'm glad you mentioned how Monty started to get fewer touches when Campbell started calling plays. And a big part of that, other than the Vikings game at Detroit, the McCarthy, J.J. McCarthy win, was where they just kept kind of peppering Jahmyr Gibbs in protection. Other than that game, Gibbs has been pretty dang good protection now, and he was porous early in his career. And he's become a lot better, but that makes Montgomery more expendable. Because now you're saying, okay, we can get another guy to do the Monty dirty work stuff, but now we have Gibbs that can take 65 to 70% more of these touches or snaps because now he's valid as not only as a receiver, but as a pass protection back. So it's kind of these little indicators of the running back and what they need. It kind of matches this perfectly. I like this for Montgomery. I totally get it for the Lions. They can get younger too there as well. And Montgomery seems like just an amazing guy, an amazing team player as well, which is nice for this. I think that's what a big thing for this Texans team that seems like they're trying to go through, especially on offense. So I don't know. This one made a lot of sense for me. I thought it was a little rich for a running back, a vet running back. But I mean, I know a fourth rounder and a backup offensive lineman, but still, that's different than maybe a few years ago where it was like, oh, yeah, six rounder fodder. You know, so it seems like to me maybe there's a competing offer that they maybe had, but very active trade. And I like this. This one made sense to me. Even the Scruggs throw in made sense for me of why the Lions wanted that in. Depth. Because Graham Glasgow retired or moved on. I can't remember the exact phrasing he used from the Lions as well. So they need that kind of today, swing guy. Released, right? Okay, yes. But he is no longer a Lion. And that's the story of the Lions, though, is that they shore up that interior offensive line. They can kind of get back on track to what we kind of expect out of them. All right, the Texans, though, very active on Monday. They also trade offensive lineman, I would say, right tackle slash left guard slash right guard, Titus Howard, to the Browns. Now, I will say this, and then Howard signs an extension. I will say this. I thought this was a good move for the Browns because they need guys with a pulse. And Howard is more than just a pulse. I actually think he's at worst an average starter. I would say above average to maybe even touching good starter. He really has impressed me, especially last year with his versatility. He was the most consistent offensive lineman for the Texans. Ariante Ursary, their left tackle, I think is going to be a nice good starter down the road, but he was a rookie. But man, Howard at tackle, if they had injuries there, and then Trent Brown moves to tackle. Okay, now Howard can play guard and be a solid guard there. The Browns just need five guys. So that unlocks that they don't particularly need to address something, just need offensive linemen to get these guys out there. So it's a rich extension, but he's a starting offensive lineman with versatility. These are what the going rate for a starting offensive lineman is about 18 to 20 million. Just wait till next week. So this is why I think this is actually a pretty good deal for a guy that can actually play right tackle. And then the Texans need a little cap relief. They got stuff kind of squeezing now. So I understand that maybe getting out ahead, get a fifth rounder, but a little scary for an offensive line that needs help too, the Texans, that they're just going away with probably their most consistent offensive lineman, versatile one. But what'd you think about this one, Matt?
Yeah, just on paper, it's tough with Houston because we know that the offensive line was a big problem last year. That's difficult, you know, but for Cleveland, absolutely. They needed an entire new offensive line. So I love the fact that they get that flexibility with a player like Howard. Yeah. If you end up finding your way to two guards, great. He's your right tackle. You end up finding a solution at right tackle. Yeah. Awesome. You kick him inside to guard. I think obviously when Houston seemingly would land on their best five, he was a guard for them. Just to me, it's difficult with Houston. They need to get better on the offensive line, and he was probably their most consistent player, so it's tough, but I do understand that, yeah, you've got like the Will Anderson extension coming down the pipeline here pretty soon, so you need to start budgeting for that, and that's going to be a big, hefty price tag.
Yep, that's kind of just everything with the Texans is like that. It just stinks that this was the sacrifice, because it's just such a position that's like a little scary for them to lose a what I think is a solid starter at worst. So that's just the one scary. It's how the NFL is. I think this is a great first step forward to rebuilding that offensive line for the Browns. And our latest mock I did with Charles, which is out right now, is we had them double dipping at O-line. We had them in the first round. We had them taking Monroe Freeling at six, which is like, heck yeah. I got I got so much free link stock and I'm seeing everybody else catch up with that one. So yeah, I got so much, but like me and Charles were like, let's put it at six. Yeah. Yeah. I would say, and then now we're seeing all these other mocks coming out. Right. Yeah. 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 But I think that would be a great pick. But then we had him taking Spencer Fanneau, had him moving up to take Fanneau from Utah, who I have some questions at right tackle, but I do think he has versatility. He took snaps at center in the combine last week, tested very athletically, doesn't have the longest arms, but I do think that, okay, that kind of sounds like Howard a little bit. Can he stay a tackle or is he a guard? Doesn't matter. Get your best five out there. So like actually that kind of, if they went those three and then address, maybe sign one more guy or something else, that's a good first step forward to like rebuilding something that could just be nuclear bad in the first year of Monken and whoever's starting at quarterback there. So I like this for the Browns and I get the price tag. I totally get that. But man, that's the going rate. That's how that just wait until you see these guys starting to get paid in the next couple of years. So, all right, we'll go on to the last news item. Last couple of things. Chiefs released Jawan Taylor. And that kind of seemed like it was coming. No more talks about his false starts and everything. Please, God. But this is why they also last year signed Jalen Moore, because he had some versatility at both tackle spots. And that can be kind of a safe option. And then they can maybe they're a sneaky team that maybe go offensive lineman with that first pick, by the way. With pick nine, Andy Reid loves shoring up O-line, but just draft offense. Just draft offense, please, Chiefs. That's all I want to ask you. And the Commanders released Marshawn Lattimore, cap casualty. He's banged up sometimes, too. Still has some talent. Curious where he ends up. Commanders need a lot of defensive help. But the last news item before we dive deep into free agents, Max Crosby, the weekly could be traded discussion. Can we get Jay Glazer on to talk about it? get him going about this, start the cycle again. But yeah, it could be traded, quote unquote, this week per Albert Breer. But call it, let's just have like a little one little fodder here. What's your dream landing spot for Max Crosby? What's you can consider money, you can't, which is like a first landing spot that comes to head for you.
Yeah, I got one in each conference beyond the obvious names, Ooh. Some of which are on the screen right now. It's and I would throw the Bears also in sort of the ones that are you see the Bears connected to him. You see Cowboys, Eagles, Patriots as we're showing on the screen right now. You typically see those. I will throw again one out in each conference. NFC, and these are two teams, by the way, that have thrown some resources at edge rusher or have kind of like not exactly had big hits, but they're always kind of looking for somebody there. I would say AFC, Baltimore Ravens. You want to play some of the light boxes with Jesse Minter, I would imagine, on defense. Well, this is the type of physical, can stop the run edge rusher that really helped that Chargers defense over there. They've got about like $18 million on the cap right now. Obviously, that would maybe be a little bit of a hindrance, but you do need to extend Lamar Jackson as well. He's got like a $70 million cap room. If you're able to bring that number down, that certainly helps there. You probably have to sacrifice Tyler Linderbaum to do that, but he's not responding to Eric DaCosta's text or his agent's not responding to text anyway, so maybe that's fine. And then NFC, I'll throw out Tampa Bay as another team that just needs an edge rusher. Like this has been one where it's like, all right, we'll try to draft a guy in the first round. We'll try to do this. We'll sign Hassan Reddick. This is a no more half measures, as you like to say. Just go get Max Crosby, another guy who can stop the run. You maybe can dial back the blitzing a little bit. And they feel like a team where there's some pressure to win. They feel like a team that the defense just needs a true superstar, like a difference maker. He would provide that for a unit that, like I said, they've got some solid players there, but I think this helps put them over the top and maybe makes their life a little bit easier so that the offense doesn't always have to carry a burden that I think at times has been troubling for the offense, since they're generally a very up and down unit and probably always will be with Baker Mayfield.
I think burden is a good word. No, that's a fun one, the Bucs, because they need a guy that just can win, like not just in the scheme sense, the guy that can just line up and go. And that's what's cool about Crosby. It's like my one negative with him is that how hard he plays and how many snaps he's played. He's played over 1,000 snaps over and over. Does he wear down earlier? Like, I'm not saying he will. Like, I got maybe find more data sets for that. That's just my one thing that kind of keep my head. But man, like you get him and he plays so hard. He plays every snap. He's dynamic against the run. He's dynamic against the pass. If you have another dude or if you have an aggressive front, like that's like, yeah, he's not just a cherry on top. He's the needle mover that pushes you over the top. I think the teams that you would expect like are going to be active. Like you saw the Patriots, the Eagles. You already mentioned those. Like the Bills would be interesting as far as, but they need so much. Two teams that came to mind. One was the Chargers, because they first off, even just logistically, they have cap space, and also that's kind of what they need. They tried to take a swing at Owe last year, and he's a free agent now. But that's a guy, but that's in division. So yeah, that's probably not going to happen, but it's the Raiders. You never know. The other team in California is the 49ers. Remember, this team will get aggressive and they'll do funky things. They went after Hargrave out of nowhere. They traded for CMC. Like they will get aggressive. And I think they're kind of know they're in a spot. So I'm kind of curious. I'm curious how the 49ers, what they decide this offseason. Whether they're just acting like, la, 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 everything's okay, or whether they take a deep breath. Like, I'm very curious how they kind of go about things. So these are just adding on to the teams you say. The Cowboys are obviously going to be another team, which I think would be hilarious in a roundabout way. Move on from Micah, but use those picks to add in Max. If you actually end up with that front, I'd actually be pretty stoked about it. So I have to throw them in there. Yeah, I know. I think anyone's valid. You mentioned the Bears. Like, they need to add juice. I said the Eagles, you know, you never have to count out Howie. I think NFC is more likely, but again, it's Raiders, and you just don't know how they're going to go about it, even though, like, you know, spy tech and everything. It's really funny. Every time Max Crosby's mentioned and, like, trades mentioned, it's like, he is really good friends with owner Mark Davis. I don't know why. I think that's really funny. You never really see that reporting, and it's always, like, the second line after Max Crosby. Max Crosby, who's really good friends with owner Mark Davis. Like, I've never really seen that
before. My sense is I think they kind of want to, like, make the relationship salvageable just in case both sides ultimately are like, all right, you know what? Never mind. Like, it feels like that's why he's kind of, when I think it was when Glazer was on our show on Yahoo Sports Daily and reported about the Max Crosby thing, then he kind of came out and be like, no, you know, whatever. Like, I don't want to go anywhere. I think they want it to be like, oh, we wanted to keep Max and he really wanted to stay here, but we just got blown away by this offer. I think that's kind of the way they want to frame it.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, I don't know. It's interesting. I think he is worth a trade. I don't think he'll get what Parsons got because he's older, has those snaps coming off injury, yada, yada, yada. But I do think it'll be at least a first rounder and some fodder to fill out the trade. But very curious where Max ends up or if he does end up anywhere else. But yeah, to me, it's, I don't know, Bears is name, maybe just comes to mind. Bears, Cowboys, yeah, I guess the Bills as well. But all right, let's get into the free agents. Stuff, guys that we actually know are free agents. Guys, no more, well, we think with Kirk Cousins. Have we got any new reporting with Kirk Cousins and his free agency? But we're going to start.
It is March. It is March, so we're due March. For another Kirk Cousins is getting released report.
I'm so glad you brought that up last week because I was like, all right, that's how I feel. Because I was like, I feel like I've read four things about him. And I'm like, it's the same, right? Nothing's changed, right? Like,
yeah.
Why does this keep getting back into the cycle? Because anytime that happens, I used to have a coworker like this. He would repeat himself what we were going to do when I was with the Falcons. He would repeat like, okay, so we got to do this. And I'll be like, okay, sounds good. You know, and then like 20 minutes later, like, all right, so we got to do this. And I'll be like, okay,
yeah,
5 minutes later. So we gotta do this. Got to, I'll be it. Like, did something change? Like now, because if you bring it up again, it's making my brain go like, oh, something's different. So I got to listen to this. But anyways, all right. Let's get into the quarterbacks. We're going to each go position by position. We'll start with quarterbacks, but it's going to be one kind of the top of the radar guys or top of the class guys, I guess you would put it. And then maybe an under the radar signing that we think are interesting. A guy that can maybe outkick their contract, maybe gets more than expected, or maybe just interesting wave two, wave three type of guys. But we'll start, I think, with Daniel Jones, because I think this is just so interesting as far as what the Colts want to do and the whole conundrum that they got going on with Jones, with Alec Pierce, and really their entire franchise, because they're kind of banking on signing a guy that was playing very, very well, started tapering off a little bit in the last month, and then pops his Achilles. And that's not a, oh, MCL. That's not a even a, oh, ACL. It's an Achilles. And our recent data points with Achilles injuries is not great, especially when that happened in December. And so they're deciding the tag, the transition tag, this Colts meeting. I believe the tag deadline is today. So that will actually, I think transition tag is what I saw that they might do. But very interesting kind of decisions that the Colts have to make. Do you have any kind of more thoughts on this and maybe what they can possibly do and decide upon?
I fear that the Colts have ultimately learned the wrong lesson from their success last season, which... And I think they're falling into the fallacy of like, incomplete information is good information. Essentially, what I mean by that is that, well, they lose Daniel Jones and then the season kind of falls apart. Although, to your point, you know, when he was I should actually say that before they lose Daniel Jones, you know, he broke his freaking leg, which is a whole nother injury. You know, talking to Michael Pittman at the Super Bowl, he was going on and be like, people talk about, like, oh, he just fractured his leg. No, he broke his leg, and it was real. It was difficult for him to play to the potential that he had. Anyways, point being that I think that happened. Everything bad happened after that. And if that had just not happened, only good things would have happened going forward. Daniel would have continued to play at the level. But you don't know that, right? Like, you didn't see a full 17-game sample of Daniel Jones playing at the level that he was playing in the first, you know, whatever you want to call it, 2 months of the season, first 8 weeks of the season, when they were a historically efficient offense. I think the lesson to learn from that is not that you can just stick anybody in this offense, because we've seen that's not true, but with the way that it was designed, the way that it felt, the way that it was schemed up, and the players around them, I think you could get at least competent if you have a competent quarterback back there, you can get a successful and efficient offense. And now it feels like, no, we must have Daniel Jones. And I think there is there's something like the devil's advocate there is that they've had so much quarterback turnover that they just so badly want it to be a stable situation. Well, just because you want something doesn't mean it's true. And I just think you can tell with the way especially Chris Ballard talks about it. He knows he's on the hot seat. He knows that, you know, they've got to win this year. And it just feels like he's clinging to the most recent good thing that happened. And I just worry if they're running the risk of kind of repeating the mistake that the Giants made a couple of years ago. Yes. I think they'll probably keep Alec Pierce around. Alec Pierce probably won't go the way of Saquon Barkley. You know, I think he probably sticks in Indy, which is important. Although I can kind of get myself into a brain pretzel of like, well, did Daniel Jones make Alec Pierce or Alec Pierce? You know, I can get myself in a brain pretzel talking about this stuff. But regardless, I think they'll probably keep Pierce around. But it's a very similar situation where you got like a well schemed up situation out of Daniel Jones. And then you've also got this other big name offensive skill position player available in free agency. So it's a tough spot for Indy, but I do kind of ultimately, after thinking about it and sitting with it, I think they've kind of ultimately learned the wrong lesson from their mistake last year, or from their success last season.
I think so too. I mean, that's why they made the Sauce Gardner trade, is because they're like, yeah, this is it. Yeah. And they really, and I'm so glad you brought the Giants example, because that's the one that always lives in my head, is with Brian Daboll after his first year. And then they re-upped with Daniel Jones and they ran it all back. And I was like, ooh, well, you guys got to understand what you are. And it's, I know when you're in the building, you're like, yeah, this is all great. And you want everything to be optimistic. I mean, you even hear how I talk about guys when I'm scouting. I mean, that's what you got to do. It's like, what can they do? Not what can't they do? And you just think about the limitations. But the thing is, what are you betting on? You're betting on we'll call it 10 games, maybe 11, where Daniel Jones is playing the best football of his life. Everything's going great. He's taking sacks at the lowest rate of his life. He's not running around a lot. He's very precise and everything. And it was a very fun offense to watch. Or are you betting on that he gets hurt again and that he's going to be up and down like he's been the rest of his career? Shane Steichen's provided a much better infrastructure and better offense than Brian Daboll ever did. I easily could say that. Yeah. But I also would say it's like, well, he can turn into a pumpkin at any time. Like, there's just so much more risk than like, yep, this is it. And they're acting like a lot, like, yep, this is it. This is what it is. This is what we are. We just got to get healthy and we'll be fine. To me, it's like, oof, they're betting on outliers. And they could be right. I mean, they were right for 2 months last season. But like, I would bet more on the bigger sample size, which is that he's more an average-ish quarterback that can run around a little bit, but now he's coming off an Achilles. And even just Jeremy Fowler from ESPN, they're kind of just doing like kind of like a roundup of news and rumors and everything. But they're just talking about like it's okay. We're going to give like Daniel Jones maybe 40 million, like 40 something million. And I'm just like, it's just like there's so much more risk than I think people are addressing right now. And I'm not saying this doesn't work out.
Like, literally, we gave Daniel Jones 40 million.
And it's like, I think how much I'm seeing people just wave it away, like, yeah, but it was going so great. It's like, I get that. And I totally get that. But there's so much more risk with all of this just crapping out on you so badly. And then you have no first round pick next year. That's another thing. They don't have, if things don't go sour, they don't have that. If they go 9-8 again, they're kind of stuck there because they don't have that injection of talent. And then they're now cash strapped while paying Daniel Jones this much money. And so you're going to pay Dean, as everyone is learning to not pay the Tuas of the world, you're going to just do that, you know, like give him that right. contract that everyone else is shying away from. It's just, it's sticking your head in the sand about a lot what's going on. And again, not saying not to pay Daniel Jones. I think there is a way you can pay him, make it manageable, maybe until his injury is okay, maybe play Riley Leonard for that first month of the season, whatever you want to do to make sure everything's okay. Like, but that is, I don't know. There's just so much more risk to this that, say Daniel Jones comes back and the offense is good, the infrastructure is good, but he's about 80% of what he is, and you go 8-9 again or 9-8 again or some record like that, miss the playoffs, just miss it, you're stuck in the middle. Do you get kind of like my issues here? It's like, well, then what, like, that's not putting you over the top. Like, you're just stuck in the middle. You're like paying to be stuck in the middle. And that's a little scary to me. Shout out Steelers wheel. But no, let's move on to other quarterbacks because they have the money to pay it. They have a little bit of a victim of their own success with Alec Pierce going off, and that creates a tough decision for them. I'm curious how they thread this needle because it's just like they could, if they're wrong, they're stuck. They're stuck at a capped 9-win team, I think, because there's so much more this roster is going to need down the road. Other quarterbacks at the top of the class, Malik Willis, Aaron Rodgers, Kirk Cousins. But any thoughts on Willis? Any new thoughts about where he could end up? It seemed locked in with the Dolphins, but now it's like Cardinals? It seems like other teams are kind of floating out, which to me is robbing Peter to pay Paul. So like, go, bye, Kyler. We're going to go mystery box Malik. like that kind of seems a little different to me But any other thoughts on kind of these other quarterbacks that are at the top of this class?
I think I get your point about how it is kind of like, you know, Malik Willis could be anything. He could even be Kyler Murray, you know, the family guy meme. But at the same time, I just think you do have to consider the relationship with Kyler Murray, which is probably just so beyond dunzo. I mean, even if it is a new coaching staff, you soft benched the guy last year, if not just hard benched him. You definitely medium benched him last year with Jacoby Brissett. Like very, very, at the very best, it was a medium benching. It really wasn't that soft. Everybody knew what was going on there. So it's just tough to come. Tough to come back from that, but I get you're gonna get off his contract. You're gonna have to probably cut him, which makes him interesting because then he can sign for a really low rate somewhere else. I think that opens up the window for more teams to potentially get in on Kyler Murray. But I think Malik Willis is different enough from Murray. I think at this point he's probably a better runner than Kyler Murray. I just wonder if he's able to access the middle of the field more than Kyler Murray. And with Malik, it's just tough because you're going to always be dealing with full or small sample sizes, but regardless, I think the Arizona thing is probably the favorite at this point. Miami just never made any sense to me because they're going to have to take it on the chin with the Tua contract. And that's going to be worse than Murray. You're going to then turn around and then have money to pay Malik Willis. I don't know. That's tough to me, but I get why people are excited about Willis, cause there's just not that many interesting quarterbacks available this offseason. At the very least, he's interesting. I could see them doing we sign Malik Willis, we release Jacoby Brissett because we get some cap room from that. He probably goes to New York to play with Frank Reich, who he's and just be like a, I think you yeah. you've made it was you that made this pitch that you know he ends up yeah. following yeah to Frank Reich and just be is kind of
just it was one of my Pepe Sylvia. It was like attaching. I was like, but he played for him for 6 weeks there. You try to attach all these.
Totally
guys.
Fine. As I think I said before, if the Garrett Wilson, fantasy scam season can happen for him with Jacoby Brissett, totally fine with it. I think he's due for one. But yeah, then you'd get like Jimmy Garoppolo in as a backup. I think that makes sense, actually.
Yeah, no, I know. Willis's market being maybe a little bit more open is more interesting to me because I agree with you. Like the Dolphins kind of chalking it in, while it still might happen and I still get the connection, I feel like the Dolphins would make more sense to me, Bobby Slokes, the OC, to trade for Davis Mills. That would make more sense to me. A guy that maybe we get something, but maybe, lose games. But let's just get hey, Miami fans, you got to know where you're at right now. I think you guys should be watching a lot of Texas games this year. Your quarterback
plan is Davis Mills and Quinn Ewers. See you in 2027.
And that makes Malik Willis sound amazing.
Yeah, I know, right? Oh, my God.
I get it. I know. But that to me, that's maybe a connection I hadn't thought, but like that's – for me, for the Dolphins, like get through this year and have a quarterback competent enough to see what you got, like kind of be like, okay, everyone, just run the offense. It's kind of like Brissett with the Jets. So the young guys, it's just not complete crap and you can't even operate an offense. You want at least a guy to be like, is A.D. Mitchell good, like with the Jets, or is this young tight end good with the Dolphins, or whoever the receivers are going to be outside Waddle for the Dolphins? We can at least assess them, the offensive lineman, we can assess the pocket. So maybe Mills is there. Kyler being a true free agent, that's, or, you know, quasi one, that is interesting to me, because I don't know, man, I'm kind of like talking on both sides of my mouth with Kyler. I was originally lower on him than a lot of people when he was with Cliff. And then I got higher on him than people, I think, on their petsing. And so it's, of course, somewhere in between. But he's the one guy of this group that's like touched top 10 play. Not saying he's a top 10 quarterback, but he's touched it in the right circumstances. I mean, he was an MVP candidate for 1 year. Whatever, was that 21? 20, 21? Like, he was an MVP candidate for a few weeks. I think it was 21. But I do think that he is more interesting and better than he's getting credit for. Like, now he's become almost underrated. He's not perfect. Like, he fell into his bad habits last year, bailing from the pocket, not throwing those dig routes over the middle, which I knew we were pulling our hair out about. But you can make him work. And that's why the Vikings pairing is a little more interesting, because any quarterback that launches the ball, and that's what Kyler's always been pretty good at, not pretty good, really good at. He throws a great deep ball. That is the Vikings offense. That's KOC. So like Kyler and Geno Smith are way more interesting with the Vikings than maybe some other teams because of just their aggressive play style. I think you were original Geno Vikings kind of pairing guy. And that's one that's kind of, I think, is more live than like people are. I mean, that's already getting reported right now. So like but that play style match makes sense to me. Same with Kyler there. That makes sense to me. Cause like the Jets going after Kyler, I'd be like, what are you guys doing? You're just making a mess. Like, that's why Jacoby makes sense, you know? So it's like the Steelers with Kyler could be interesting, but I don't think McCarthy and Kyler are perfect, but who knows? McCarthy might kind of do like a hybrid offense, but like, yeah, Vikings and Kyler actually make a little bit more sense. You're not going to get probably the grooming of McCarthy you maybe want. Geno might be a little better at that. Kyler's going to come in and compete and do his thing. But maybe that's what the Vikings want, because the Vikings are betting on themselves. These coaches are betting on themselves. So Kyler might be that continuation bet, I guess is a good way to put it. Rodgers, to me, seems like Steelers, Vikings. Like, that seems like his two potential landing spots. Kirk Cousins, I think, could be a nice get-us-through-this-year kind of quarterback, whether that's, I don't know, just name a team. Name any of the teams that we brought up. Like, Kirk Cousins can be the nice, like, fallback consolation prize. But, all right, wrapping up Arizona. This group, though, let's talk about the under-the-radar guys that we haven't mentioned yet. You had one, and actually, all of your under-the-radar choices for all of our categories, I want to, like, applaud you. You had some really, really good ones. So great job, man. But, quarterback under the radar. I know, right, man?
Might as well call it on the plane. No one cares about, but I care about. That's what the under the radar about.
It's my favorite category. I'm dead serious. I'm not making this up. I love the under the radar category for free agency, because I think it's so much fun to like shine on some of these guys that in 6 months, everyone's like, who's this guy? It's like, yeah. But you're under the radar quarterback in free agency, Matt Harmon.
Yeah, I haven't heard this guy's name come up as we're essentially planning to just rearrange the deck chairs and the backup quarterback Titanic. Everybody's like, Will Levis is on the trade block. Stidham's on the trade block. Davis Mills on the trade block. And obviously, we talked about like Bajan and, you know, Rattler and Richardson last week. You've talked about Tanner McKee, I think, for 3 years now. So it's like, this is the moment where everybody's just going to, I mean, Malik Willis is even like shuffling, Jimmy Garoppolo shuffling all these backup quarterbacks around. Marcus Mariota is just going to be a free agent. He's been really damn productive when he's been out there and not always in like great situation. I know that the Cliff Kingsbury offense is a little bit cookie cutter, whatever, but he's a good fit for a shotgun, you know, run based offense like that, where we're getting the ball out. That is a good fit for him, but still, I mean, again, he's been one of the more efficient quarterbacks on an EPA basis when he has started. I understand that some of that's not just Marcus Mariota, but if you're a team like Miami and you're looking to go cheap at the position, I would bring in Mariota for, you know, a little bit. And he's actually been, he used to be like an annoyingly cautious quarterback early in his career. Now that he's on the Commanders were his fourth NFL team, I believe, he's really just let his hair down a lot more. And I think he's been aggressive with the football. He's pushed it. Him and Terry McLaurin have had some awesome moments when they've both been healthy and Jaden Daniels has not been playing. So yeah, I think Mariota is better than, I mean, if I was just saying I got to start somebody in 2026. Maybe there's not as much, well, there's definitely not any theoretical upside, that's for sure. But if like, I just want to know what I'm getting, I think he's better than a lot of these, you know, younger guys that we're thinking about just shuffling around here this year. So he's definitely somebody I wish I I'm not saying I'm like a Mariota bro or anything, but I think that's more interesting than some of these, or at least, again, I know what I'm getting. He's under the radar, it seems.
He's now had a couple stops as the backup. And like when he was with the Raiders, he had a nice little stint as a backup. He goes to the Falcons. He's a starter. Had nice moments, but his accuracy, like that was so under center, and like his accuracy really sprayed. And then he gets with
it got Cliff, very toxic, like, oh, too.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, he quit the team. Like he like left the building, like, which is strange. And he doesn't seem like that type of guy.
While he was on a Netflix show, by the way.
That's right. Yeah, that's right. When they got camera talks right around him. You got to make way for Desmond Ritter. But I do think Mariota being in a gun heavy offense, you can find use for him. Last year, quarterbacks that threw 200 more attempts. So this is everybody. There's 36 quarterbacks. Mariota ranked 11th in dropback success rate, 19th in EPA per play, 22nd in EPA per dropback. That's fine for a high end backup that maybe could be a spot starter. That is ideal. Can run the show. He had a higher QBR than Jane Daniels last year. So I do think that, like, I'm glad you brought this one up, because I will say, like, he is the end of the Falcon stuff was getting a little annoying how he was playing and missing throws, but how he played with Washington was much more like commendable, honorable, I guess, as a quarterback. And so I'm so glad you brought this up, because I totally agree with you that he's kind of a, brought up the Dolphins, the Jets, Steelers, any team that's just like, hey, let's throw some bodies at this position. Browns, whoever just needs bodies that knows they're not actually competing. They're not kind of threading a needle. They're just more getting through the season. Mariota's right there in there. Anybody I brought up Jacoby Brissett with or Kirk Cousins with, I would throw Mariota in there as well. He's big. He can run pretty well. He's has some limitations as a thrower, but he can get some stuff done if you have a nice, decent ecosystem around him. So yeah, I like that one. I want to bring up one. This isn't like me saying this, but apparently Jimmy G does have a market, which is, do we forget what it looked like in Vegas? That was without Kyle Shanahan dialing up plays. So maybe if, I don't know who, but if a team that wasn't a Shanahan offense, wants to get him, that might be one. But Geno Smith was the other if he gets cut or moved, but that's kind of not a true one yet, because just anything I brought up before with the Viking stuff or anyone that wants to be aggressive and get through a year with an aggressive vet quarterback, I think that could be fun. But I will say that my answer for this is I think the backup QB trade market is more interesting than these kind of Mariota's one, but the Jimmy G, I'd rather take a swing at McKee or Bajan even Rattler. I have a tier below that, but even him or Richardson. The other team I wanted to bring up, we talked about Richardson last week, was another landing spot for him is the Rams that I think would be really interesting. And kind of just, that one could be cool as far as timeline, as far as getting his skill set more, kind of like narrowing his skill set to a guy that was pretty good with that. And also, there's been times wherein, whether it was John Wolford or this other guy, I want to say he played quarterback of Virginia, and I always forget his name. But he was in there. Bryce Petty. No, not Bryce Petty. I'm going to think of his name. But he had McVay would use him on design runs. And I've always had the inkling that McVay wants to do that stuff. And I have a theory that that's why Shanahan went after Trey Lance, because he saw McVay toy with that stuff. And he was like, ooh, that seems fun. And that was when Goff was kind of fading a little bit at his end of his tenure with LA. And I've always just thought that's been in the back of his mind. So Richardson could be really cool to kind of bridge the
Stafford world. How badly he wanted to bench Jared Goff for John Wolford, Sean McVay. That was when I read it the same way, that he at some point wants the mobile quarterback. So that would be along the same lines as the Chiefs suggestion that I made, where you're looking to he wouldn't get to start. He wouldn't get to start. I think theoretically he could start the first couple weeks of the season if no Patrick Mahomes. But this wouldn't happen there in LA. But along the same thing, you're rehabbing your value in a good ecosystem.
Yep. And then other teams like the Steelers would just be a dice roll, but I don't think they would do it. But no, there's some interesting, I wouldn't recommend Richardson for the Jets, but I think Richardson going to a team with an old quarterback that they're, they might be looking next year or 2 years from now, they're trying to find some new bridge plan. The Rams are kind of the easiest example of this. That's a team that's interesting to me. If the Falcons wrote out Kirk Cousins and didn't draft Penix, that would have been an interesting one, but that's not what they did. They decided to double dip. So there's more landing spots for Richardson as I kind of marinated on it, that I think would be kind of cool. But yeah, that kind of group is more interesting to me as far as who does. So one of these guys is getting traded. There's just so much smoke going on right now. And I think they do have some interesting talent, and there's teams in position because they can't address that spot traditionally, that trade market, I think, is going to be a boom in. Or they're going to be watching a lot of Texas film and a lot of South Carolina film and a lot of Oregon film and a lot of these other guys in this interesting quarterback class next year. But we're taking our first break after a nice 45 minutes. So we'll take our first break, and then we're going to come back with some skill position free agents. See you guys in a sec. All right, we are back. We're going to get to the skill position free agents. We'll start with running back. I had a little news right before the show started. We kind of knew this was happening, but Breece Hall is officially franchise tagged by the Jets, and it's to work out a long-term deal. So I'll consider him off the market for this discussion. But we got other fun names. This is a fun free agent class in running backs. You got some couple different flavors. Yeah. You got Kenneth Walker and Travis Etienne, which I'll describe as the shaky vision, big play backs that can also receive a little shaking protection. Then you got Rico Dowdle, who was with the Panthers, has been with the Cowboys, kind of a do-it-all back, maybe is the best way to put it. Nice runner between the tackles. You got Tyler Algier, the hamster ball, big fan of him, that I think could be a very fun candidate for somebody that needs a little bit of muscle in their backfield and just good at everything, or checks the box, everything, good in protection, solid receiver as well. Maybe doesn't have that top end speed, but has that build up speed. Nice singles and doubles hitter. But this group of running backs, Matt, before we get into the under the radar guys, who are you looking at as maybe a fun signing or anybody that you just want to talk about?
Well, I think we've talked about how Travis Etienne, Kansas City Chiefs, is a fun one. We talked a lot about that last week. Yep. That makes sense. So I'm going to throw you my landing spots for the three other guys in that kind of top Ooh. Tier and see if, and because there's two of them are connected and one of them is connected to news we had earlier. My suspicion is that the Broncos were the last minute team that was trying to get Dave Montgomery, which is why that offer got a little bit sweetened there. I think they really want a veteran back to complement RJ Harvey.
That makes a lot of sense. Yeah,
Rico Dowdle to Denver is one I'm looking at there. Coming off back-to-back 1,000-yard seasons, by the way, is Rico Dowdle, and is just like burned out very quickly at the end of the Panthers' run. So I'm going to send him to Denver, and then these two are connected here. I think Kenneth Walker, Washington Commanders. It just seems like Jeremiah Love in my little trade-down scenario. They definitely can't trade down for him. I think if he's available at 7 where they're picking, I think they would take him. But yeah. Now they're talking about like the Titans or even the Cardinals taking Jeremiah Love. So just I don't know. Maybe that's silly season. But now I think they really, really want an explosive back. They want to get more under center. So send Kenneth Walker there. And then your buddy Tyler Algier goes to Seattle to take his place because he'll be cheaper than Walker. Oh. And he is a perfect fit in a zone-based run scheme, which they clearly want to stay in that world.
Don't tempt me with a good time.
So yeah, that is my landing spot kind of roulette for those three guys there, because like I said, two of them are connected. So I actually really like that, by the way, for Seattle, because I'm with you. Algier's a guy who I think he's deserving of his opportunity, and is somebody that doesn't have a lot of tread on his tire, was really good the year before Bijan Robinson, and has always been really good in a complimentary role. And Seattle has so much cap room. I understand if they don't want to overextend themselves for Kenneth Walker, because I think his money is going to be pretty big coming off a Super Bowl MVP. But being able to get a guy like Tyler Algier, who, like I said, is an efficient runner and is deserving of his money, I think that's a really he's a guy that doesn't count as under the radar, but probably more in the big picture, non-football 301 zone, he's a little more under the radar. Yeah. And he's one of my favorite backs available on the market.
Yeah, I for costs and what he brings to the table, can play every down. Like, yeah, he has a hard running style, so you always be wary of that. But like, he doesn't have the touches, like you said. Like, I don't know, just those guys that do it all and has a little bit more juice than you would think. Again, not a home run threat, but a doubles threat. Last year, he ranked 15th of rushing efficiency, so just success rate, and 22nd in explosive run, so like an above average back in both capacities. And I think just because that run style, it fits in a lot of runs too. I agree that zone might be his best runs, because then he gets north and just batters, but he's good in gap stuff when I've seen him. I love the Seahawks landing spot for him. I would like the Broncos too for him. That would actually be another fit. not saying to the full extent, but like it kind of reminds me of maybe when Michael Turner back in the day became a free agent because he was backing up LT and he went to the Falcons, got signed.
Yeah, the inverse.
In their first year there, that regime year, and had a huge year, AP first team all pro. Not saying that with Algier, but he's a guy that in a more primary role can actually surprise some folks. So I know we overhype. Now we're just setting ourselves up for disappointment when he gets a 1 year, $4 million deal and it's nothing. But yeah, I do think that he's going to have some fans because he kind of does it the right way, that a way that kind of coaches like. So yeah, that's why I just keep bringing him up. But Donald's a fine option as well for teams that need some beef, teams that need just kind of that sturdy guy. I know these guys that kind of just do it all. I like that because you kind of, I wouldn't say set it and forget it, but you kind of do. It just makes everybody else's lives easier because now it's like, well, now we don't need the protection back. Now we don't need this guy on early downs. Now we don't need a short yardage back. Then it just becomes whoever your other back is. It's just like, wee! Like we can have the gadget back. We can have the pass catching only. But like that's why I like these types of guys. It just opens up everybody else. So yeah, Algier, Dowdle, I think are fun flavors on top of the two explosive playbacks. But yeah, Walker and Etienne to the Chiefs is just kind of something I'm kind of like just want to see one of them. I think Walker's got some fans. Anytime someone goes on a playoff run, like that's gonna like live in people's memories.
What do you make of all the talk about how the Giants are in on Kenneth Walker? That's been some of the talk lately.
I think I saw that too. I understand them wanting another, not really, but I like Tracy. I think I like Tracy more than they do. But like, and Scabu's coming off an injury. Staff. I don't know. It's just one of those things where it's like, just seems like that's your priority. Like it's,
yeah, you got, a lot, you got a lot to figure out. They're screaming that they want another back in the mix. And I kind of get it. Like, yeah, Scadaboo is not for everybody. It was very clearly for Brian Daboll, but he's probably not for everybody. And I could understand why people think he's going to burn fast, but not burn long. So I understand that part of it. But yeah, anytime you can bet against the like day three back after a coaching staff turnover, like hanging on to his workhorse role, it's usually good to bet against that happening, and it seems like they want something different at running back. But him and Kenneth Walker would be a very interesting backfield tandem. They're totally different players. I can't even begin to start like parsing out whose role is what in that, you know, Greg Roman-ish Matt Nagy run. I mean, I can't quite figure out anything that's going on with the Giants right now. And this just throws like another variable in the mix.
I know. I actually was thinking about Greg Roman now, like, cause he loves getting the QBs in the run game. And I was like, oh boy, I'm curious what kind of packages he's got cooking for Mr. Darts. because Nagy's going to let him have a lot of run in that run game. And, you know, Nagy's his own guy, you know, coming from being an Andy Reid guy. Roman does gap scheme. God, that's another thing. It's like, I haven't even thought about that. That's
what I'm saying.
It's not like Roman can't run look like? Zone, but yeah. Wow. He's just kind of like hit my brain just popped actually just thinking on that. Yeah. I know I've seen the rumors on that, and I was kind of like, I wouldn't do that. Like, I feel like you have so much more to address, but maybe they want the vet, or maybe they just want the big plays. I don't know. It's the Giants right now, so I'm very curious how the season goes for them. It feels like they're trying to do a couple things at the same time, as far as like what the regime wants and also what they want to see what they already have. Like they're quote unquote stars or guys they want to build around. You know, obviously there's neighbors coming off an injury. But then Dart has question marks and play style and everything. So I think they're kind of the same paths. Be aggressive with it, apparently. Under the radar,
Giants are on my brain, by the way. I know because we're going to get to him in a second. When I signed on here, I was looking off screen because I was literally typing in the rest of Wandale Robinson's 2025 reception perception data. I deserve like a friggin' Pulitzer Prize for having to sit through that offense for as long as I just did the last day and a half. That was not a fun watch. So Giants are on the brain, regrettably, for me.
It's not one, like some offenses, they just wash over you and you're just like, oh, this is nice to watch. You see how all the plays work, but you see the fluidity. That Giants offense, man. Because they're trying to make it comfortable for Dart, but it was just like, it was not my favorite. even where the ball got passed and it was just like a lot of stuff downfield, like the little shot play or little pull the guard, play action that they like to run that never worked because they're trying to copy it from Ole Miss, like all that stuff. Yeah, I know that probably was not. That's probably not a very fun. Their O-line was fun last year, but again, their right guard and right tackle are free agents. And I think they have another guy that might get cut. So need some help. Other spots, I think, outside just running back. I actually think running back's the one spot I would kind of put seventh for them behind everything else they need on that team. I know. I'm not in the building. I don't know. This is just what I see. Under the radar guys, though, I loved your candidate. So let's bring it up, bring him up right now. Matt, who's your under the radar running back free agent?
Yeah, Steelers MVP, Kenneth Gainwell.
Speaking of sloppy teams.
Right. Oh my God. Thinking about another team, luckily they only got one receiver I gotta watch. And it's way late in the offseason, so I don't have to revisit that for a while, the 2025 Steelers. But Kenneth Gainwell was basically their wide receiver one, was being targeted like an alpha wide receiver one on a per route basis, as we talked a lot about last season. And I think if you're a team that needs just a reliable check down back, I'd be definitely interested in Kenneth Gainwell, who I think was good, like legit good last year. It wasn't just like a stupid Aaron Rodgers meme. It was legitimately good. I think if Rodgers is back, and if they're going to live in the Mike McCarthy kind of like more spread out static West Coast world, I think he'd be a really good fit as a check down option here. So slant, flat, and his routes out of the backfield, sure, let's mix it up there in that situation. But I thought Kenneth Gainwell legit earned his touches and earned his role last year. So if you are a team that likes to utilize your running back in the passing game, I'd be interested in Kenneth Gainwell on a cheap deal, especially if you are the team. If you're the Steelers, you're bringing back Rodgers, which I wouldn't do, but they're probably going to do. Or if you're Minnesota and you end up with Rodgers there, they need a running back to go along with Jordan Mason. So maybe he just follows Rodgers around. He's his new best buddy, but he's his new Al Lazard, maybe. But regardless, I think Kenneth Gainwell legit earned his touches last year, and I think that shouldn't go unnoticed in the free agent market.
It's I did a Steelers show on the last day of the combine, or last day I was there, and they asked me a question. They're like, so what is like McCarthy's offense going to look like? That question. I go, well, I don't know who's exactly playing quarterback. And they all at the same time go, well, it's Rodgers. And I was like, oh, okay.
Yeah, I was on the same show, and I was like, are we living in the Rodgers world? Like, oh yeah, we're definitely living in the Rodgers world. I'm like, here we go.
Okay. That's fine.
All right.
Sell the tickets. I know they're even asking me like what receivers pair well. I was like, I don't know. He's going to throw it underneath. So guys that can break tackles underneath.
Old guys.
They're like, but you like Denzel Boston more. I was like, yeah, but I don't think he'll throw it like that. So maybe Mekhi Lemon, something like that. KC Concepcion, you want some guy that can break tackles. Yeah, Kenneth Gainwell, of all running backs with 100 plus rushes, led all 49 running backs in target share. He had a target share of 25.8% last year. One out of four dropbacks he was on the field, he got a target, or one out of four routes, I should say. The only other two guys above 25%, Jahmyr Gibbs and CMC.
McCaffrey.
Kenneth Gainwell, Jahmyr Gibbs, and CMC.
Same thing.
Fourth, Bijan Robinson. Man, that makes sense. And then fifth is our guy Cam Scataboo, because he was getting all the check downs and screens. So and then Devon Achane is sixth. So it's all guys that make sense. And then there's Kenneth Gainwell at the top. Not to say I've always liked Kenneth Gainwell. This is just the biggest featured role he's ever had. The Eagles would use him in packages. Like Shane Steichen always like, oh, maybe Shane Steichen might be a team that signs him, actually, now that I think about it. He'd pair well with Jonathan Taylor. But he would always use him on certain routes, crossing routes all the time. He finished sixth in success rate per route. He finished third in first downs per run. He finished 12th in rushing success rate and eighth in explosive run rate. This isn't just kind of like a joke. Like, he was efficient. He was explosive. You don't want to build the whole plane out of him. But if Gainwell is like on your team and getting those touches, like, he's going to make the most of those touches. So I love this. I love Kenneth Gainwell. Again, like a character actor now put in a future role, I don't need to see him everywhere, but I do like him on the team and like him making things a little bit better. So I really like this one because I think Gainwell is a good player. And that was the other joke I had about Rodgers was there are 14 running backs last year that had a target share above 20%, and two of them were Steelers running backs because Jalen Warren finished 11th in target share.
Unbelievable.
It's a lot of stuff underneath, running backs and tight ends. And people are like, well, they don't have a receiver. It's like, this is how Rodgers is playing right now, man. So My under the radar guys, one is more, I don't even know if he's under the radar, but it's Rashad White. You know, just not a guy that we brought up because I've always think Rashad White is a perfect number two back because he can receive. Mm-hmm. He's great on screens. He's good in pass protection. Again, when I say these check the boxes, I've never figured him out as a runner. Like, I'm like, sometimes he looks good and he's got vision, he's got patience. And then sometimes I'm like, he trips over himself or like, a wind blows him over. Or sometimes he misses the hole and I'm like, you just made a nice cut on the line. It's just an inconsistent runner, but not bad vision. It's weird. But even last year, again, running backs with over 100 carries last year, sixth in rushing success rate, finished middle of the pack in explosive runs, seventh in first downs per run. But that's more significant to me in the fact that Bucky Irving, out of these 49 running backs, finished 47th in rushing success mm-hmm. rate. So he was way above what Bucky was bringing, and Bucky finished 45th in explosive runs. Well, it said, again, Rashad White finished middle of the pack. So again, he was just – Bucky was coming back from injury and everything, but Rashad was their most consistent running back along with Sean Tucker. But I do think that he is worthy of being in a backfield. We'll see what teams do, but like I just think he could be a perfect number two for somebody that maybe already has a guy. Maybe this is who – the Lions bring in as the guy to replace Montgomery. I think maybe they draft a guy, but just something like that where if the Vikings want a cheapy guy, you know, he would pair really well with Jordan Mason if they keep him. Like there's some teams that I can throw out there that he would make a lot of sense to me. He would actually pair really well with Hampton and with the Chargers. Like I actually think that would be a nice fit where he could be the number two back there, kind of just can take the load off there. Yeah, I think Rashad White can be that really nice kind of number two guy. I had a super deep cut, Ronnie Rivers from the Rams. I've always kind of liked him. He's just like a super deep cut, one-year vet min guy. But I think he could be a surprising number two for somebody. And then Jerome Ford as a cheapie signing just because he can take stuff to the house. Just as a backup running back type. But those are my other deep cut guys. Any thoughts on those or want to move on to your forte? I'm sure you're going to be talking about plenty for the next couple of weeks. Let's get into it. Wide receivers.
Yeah.
Who do you want to talk about? Because there's some interesting names. Alec Pierce, of course, might get tagged back. We got Juwan Jennings. We got Romeo Dobbs. We got Rashid Shaheed. We got Mike Evans. We got the aforementioned Wandale Robinson, who went from like, oh my God, it's not like just garbage, empty calories to actually having a decent season. Some interesting under the radar guys as well. Which one do you guys want to talk about? Who's most interesting to you, Matt Harmon?
It's a lot of X's available here. You know, Pierce obviously might not be really available. And Pickens was also a free agent, but obviously is franchise tagged. Mike Evans, X receiver. Dobbs, X receiver. All of different varieties, by the way. Juwan Jennings, I actually think, is really interesting because I'm still like unclear exactly what his best role should be. I think he would make a pretty good Ravens receiver, by the way. You could move him around. He's a big body. He wins in tight coverage. It goes over the middle of the field. You know, I think the Ravens just need receivers with size. We talked about that's with that offense, what they need. I know that, like, I'm just scared about them signing Mike Evans because if they sign Mike Evans, that means it's over for Mike Evans. And it's just, anytime the Ravens sign a receiver at this point in their career, it's not going to go well. Outside of Steve Smith, of course, that went really well. But yeah, so to me, I think all these guys, I think this is actually a pretty good, I don't know if I want to call it good, but I think it's a pretty quality group of free agent receivers.
I agree.
If there's not a number one available here, depending on what you think about Mike Evans at this point in his career. Like Mike Evans, theoretically, for 10 games could be a number one. But I think we did start to see like the first signs of decline last year with Mike on an individual basis. And he's just a lot of lower body injuries. But he is... I could talk about receiver aging all day, and we don't need to get into that because that'll take an hour for me to break down. But it's a bunch of different guys with Dobbs and Jennings are kind of samey, but Rashid Shaheed is really different than all these guys. I'd love to bet on Shaheed if I'm a more spread based team, if I use like motion at the snap a ton. I just think there's more. I think he is. There's some untapped potential with him, I think, still as a pure receiver. But he's also going to bring you excess value for what he's going to do to open up other players. Yeah. You know, essentially like that the Tutu Atwell for the love of the game role that we joke about often, yeah. Like, hey, they give him $10 million just to create leverage for the inside breakers, the Jimmy Horn role, but he's like a valid target earner, I think, potentially. So he probably is the guy that I think is the most useful, but also has some upside still to mine here, I would say, of this group.
It's one of those where, like, statistically, he might go sign a new team, and it's like, oh my god, well, this guy only got us like 600 yards last year. Why are we paying him? But the, like you say, the boost effect that he can have, he's like a it's like a speedy glue guy because of just what the value he brings. I mean, there's a reason the Seahawks went and got him, and it's not just returnability or gadget stuff. It's just that he creates space. It's like having a really good 3-point shooter in basketball. He's a catch and shoot guy. He only shoots 4 or 5 shots a game, but it's like. But you have to guard him. Like, you have to have a defender on him. You have to account for him because he can kill you if you don't. And he kind of, like, as a route runner, has gotten so much better. That's not like the name of his game, but I think he has more value than just. It's improved a lot. I mean, he was not like this. Now he actually can run a tree, and it's one of those two words. He could end up in a not like he doesn't just have to go to a Shanahan offense or a Kubiak offense. Like, it's like, no, he could bring value to a lot of schemes. And I think that's a skill set.
I think he was better with the Saints to start the year. Like, I think if he had never gotten traded midseason, he would be making a lot more money on the open market. Those guys in New Orleans in the first half of the year probably did. I know he was statistically more productive with Kubiak the year before he got hurt, but I just the way they utilized him. More slot stuff, more on ball to free up the other guys. Like, I think that's probably the best utilization for him. So that I was trying to think, like, who's more of a spread based team but uses a lot of motion. That would sort of be the type of team I think he should go to. So I think if he had stuck in New Orleans, he might make upwards of $25 million if he had hit in the open market. He's not going to make that now.
Yeah, his target share in New Orleans was 22.2%. And then his target share when he got to Seattle was 13%, 13.8%. So exactly what you said there. So it was just he was more productive there. And that's when I was even the first half of the year. I was like, wow, Sheets really developed his game. Mm-hmm. They ran I still remember Spencer Rattler hit a high corner route to him. And I was just like, wow, how he broke off the route. Like, it was just so much more nuanced than he's been before, than pure speed. So that's a great observation, I think. But yeah, he's a guy. Speed's going to get paid, and I'll talk about my under the radar guy. But like you said, Tutu Atwell got paid $10 million last year, and there's another burner that got paid the exact same, the 1 year deal, $10 million.
De'Ami
like that's
Brown.
What that rate is. Yeah, yes, and it's that
healthy
is
scratch
like
by the end of the starting season. De'Ami Brown, by the way.
Oh no! Literally, once they stopped playing him, they improved.
Yes.
Like, and this is a guy that's like liked moments of De'Ami Brown. I was like, no, yeah, I know what you are now.
That's
okay,
enough.
We gotta get Jacoby Myers.
James Gladstone had been there for like 5 minutes before he free agency started. So, that was a weird one. That's fine. That Trent Baalke left that one. He left that one on the desk. Then they went ahead and put it up.
It's already half written, so might as well. This was after Liam Cohen went back to Tampa. We signed this deal, and then he came back, and I got fired. I like how you brought there some sameness with like maybe Juwan Jennings, Dobbs. I think Dobbs is going to get a lot more than people realize. Just the market, his skill set, not an ace, but a skill set that fits in a lot of offenses. He could be a Ravens guy, Bills, Chiefs. All these make sense. I brought up the Raiders
Niners.
With him. A lot of AFC teams. Niners are another one. Like, he is more scheme proof. Like, his role can fit, or how he plays can fit in how a lot of offenses operate. So again, I think Dobbs is gonna get paid, especially with Pierce off the market. I really like Jennings because he's a power slot. He's legitimately one of the best blocking receivers in all of the NFL. He's on the podium, top three. He is incredible. He's gritty. Sometimes can come back at the coach with that grittiness. But I think you like the competitiveness, can play outside. He's performed when he's been featured. I think he's a really good two for somebody. So yeah, these guys are interesting to me. Like I like you said, I think this is a solid class because I think these guys are, again, no aces, but man, these guys can be your number two or number three and you're fine with it. And you don't really get that in free agency all the time. Evans is curious to me. But let's get to the under the radar guys. I really liked yours. So what was it, Matt?
Yeah, Jalen Naylor has just flashed for the Vikings. He's somebody I want to do some more work on before free agency opens, but he's always flashed. I kind of think at times like J.J. McCarthy had the best chemistry with Jalen Naylor, which is not good. Like, you don't want your young quarterback to have the best chemistry with the third wide receiver when you have Justin Jefferson on the team. That's not like a good thing, but he's played inside out a little bit for them too. So that's interesting to me. And just like, again, like all these guys, there's a, I totally agree with what you said about Dobbs, by the way, that he could get like over $20 million a year because he can play X and it allows like you to take more shots on the, you know, kind of fun move around types. But ultimately he probably signs like a $20 plus million a year deal. And that gets cut after 2 years. Cause he just isn't going to totally, that's how free agency works. It is what it is. Naylor is a guy that actually might be signed to a lesser deal and you feel really comfortable. You're getting excess value of it. Cause he's still young. I mean, there are some decent routes that he runs. So yeah, for me, I think he's just a guy that I would target on the cheap like that.
No, I really like Naylor. He's really come along for me. They've liked him for a while, and it felt like not until this season it finally kind of clicked for him. I he's got some springiness to him. Just scouting him athletically and everything. Like, there's something to him. Like, I think that he could be a guy that overperforms his contract. Can't really point out like a stat. But as I'm just saying, more just like skill set and just ability. He polished his game a little bit. I still remember, I think his first career touchdown is one of the funniest ones I can remember, is because, you know, it was the classic where they motion in the receiver to like fit up block on the safety. And then they do the play action off of that. And you can tell he knows he's the number one on the play action play. So he motions in and, you know, you're supposed to act like you're about to block. And he's like, starts like leaning forward, like way too, it should have been flagged, but he's so excited because he knows he's about to get his first touchdown. And he's like, and it's like something just, I don't see that much in the like regular season. You'll see that in preseason, like a guy just like kind of show what they're about to do. And I don't know, that's burning my brain. So I'm so glad you brought this up, because when we talk about under the radar, he is the one that's like a cheapy deal somewhere, a 2 year deal somewhere where a team's just bringing him on. Like Brown went for last year, like we just joked about. And then he just outperforms that. And it's like, wow, actually, he's got a little bit more to him as we used him in more roles. So, like, yeah, I thought that was a great example. Just a one last thought, because I can't stop talking about it, but Romeo Dobbs, just statistically, we joked about this on the All Football 301 team, him and Christian Watson just outperforming expectations, I think, not just eye test, but statistically. Dobbs finished, you know, 23rd in first downs per route. He had 1.77 yards per route. He's explosive. Like, he's above board in every single stat. And I think, again, that's just a perfect way to kind of encapsulate him. He can do a little bit of everything. And lining up on the ball is such a great thing to point out. Mm-hmm. That's becoming the commodity. Not, we say X receiver, and that's kind of what we mean. But, like, guys that can win from on the ball against press, like, that's the commodity that the teams are – that's harder to find. While guys that can be off the ball and do stuff that's a little bit more fungible and more easy to find. But I like the Naylor shout. I think he could be a nice three for somebody that can be, you know, a little bit more. But a guy I was going to bring up, this isn't a tout. This is just a guy that I think might get more than we're expecting. And that's just literally because of the Tutu Atwell contract, is Tyquan Thornton. Again, I think he gets more than we think because he just brings to the table the thing that gets paid. Just like we said, Diamond Brown, Tutu Atwell, he might get one of those deals, the 1 year, low teens. I don't know what the inflation is going to be, maybe a 2 year deal. People are going to watch the Chiefs, so they're going to see him. But he, last year, he had a chemistry with Patrick Mahomes. He finished with plenty of explosive receptions. He only had 19 catches, but he had 11.8 yards per target, which was third in the entire NFL. But again, when I've seen year after year, guys like MVS get paid, and Thornton is still 25, I believe. I don't think he turns to 26 until this season. Hey, speed's going to get paid. If I'm going to go after just a speed guy, I'm signing Thornton, because at least he showed me he can do something with it.
Yeah, I got a stat on Tyquan Thornton, because I was putting together after Carnell Tate ran the 4-5, whatever. I won't unpack the whole thing on this, but why I looked this up. But essentially it was why speed is the most overrated trait to being a legit deep threat. So I was like, okay, I looked at receivers that had 250 plus yards on 20 plus air yard targets last year. There was 21 of them. Only three of them ran a sub 4.4. One of them was Tyquan Thornton, who ran the fastest 40, 4.28. He had 312 yards on throws of 20 plus air yards. I was like, how many yards did he even have last year? I looked it up, it was 438. So 71% of his total yards came on throws of 20 plus air yards, eight catches. So half of his catches. So yeah, definitely. I think in a world where we're doing all that, like pre-snap motion or motion at the snap, the 2-2 at will stuff. Again, a guy who actually caught the football on deep passes last year.
That's it. He actually like succeeded on them as opposed to just taking the top off, which is like, okay. And also, he's actually like got – he's too skinny to like really do anything with it. But he's got some grittiness as a blocker. Like that I will appreciate sure. that a little bit. Like he's not just a total like, I'm going to take a charge here. I was trying to pull up his route tree because I always cracked up looking at it. Because at one point in the middle of the year, it looked like the monster that the guy drew. I was going to say spaghetti monster, but from True Detective. I realized this reference might not hit you in the brain that like I wanted to.
I've seen the drawing. True Detective.
You see True Detective? Listen. Oh, yeah. You're more TV. No. You do prestige TV. That's right. Every TV show.
Not any movies. Come on. That's fine. No, yeah. Come on. Let's be clear.
Have you seen Alien Earth? That's the one I've kind of been peppering in. Oh, yeah. I've been watching some old movies, not just TV show. Did for a few dollars more. The old Clint Eastwood movie was very good. Watched that last night. No, Tyquan Thornton, though. Got some speed. Can actually do something with it. I'm not saying anyone's going to break the bank, but I think he maybe gets a deal that maybe would surprise some people or just a little bit more. Not crazy. Let's get on to tight ends. The other skill position. Interesting class is how I would put it. There's some names that are recognizable, but also some sneaky ones that can be a little bit more once they get off some circumstances. David Njoku, I'm looking at you. But we got Travis Kelce, David Njoku, Isaiah Likely, Tyler Higbee, and Football 301 favorite, Charlie Kolar. Yeah. Nailed
it. Is it Kolar? I thought it was Kohler.
Kohler. It's Kohler.
You just did this last one. I could be wrong, by the way. I don't know. I'm just pretty sure it's Kohler.
I know. That's what happens every time. And no one actually can like, yeah. Kohler.
Somebody needs to ask Kohler. Charlie. Let's get him on the
Charlie
pod.
Kohler.
And then he can tell us how to pronounce
I know, right?
his name.
The Y tight ends. How do you say your name? Name pronunciation. All right. This is why we need Dane Brugger. Get the beast. Kohler.
Seriously.
Kohler. Charlie Kohler. I'll never forget it. Charlie Kohler. He's going to get paid because he's a wide tight end that can block. And I want the Chiefs to sign him. If speaking of the Chiefs, so I want Charlie Kohler and he's going to get paid. There's not a lot of whys. You know, there's whys in explaining, but there's not a lot of why tight ends. And that is the commodity. If you want to do all your, everyone's going to be talking about three tight ends, what the Rams do and the multi-tight end looks. It's not the receiving tight ends that unlock it. It's the blocking tight ends that unlock. Colby Parkinson has much to do with what the Rams did this year as any of the other guys that were catching the ball, Terrence Ferguson, Tyler Higbee, amongst others, Davis Allen. But it was because you need the one guy to block to unlock the other guys, like the Bills, Jackson Haas unlocking the other guys. So that's why I think Charlie Kohler is going to get a little bit more than people realize. But tight ends, Matt, who caught your eye? Any fits that caught your eye, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, I'll throw my under the radar guy out here. Actually, Cade Otton, I think, is going to sneak up on people because I think he fits in this bucket too, where he has been just more of a true Y inline tight end. But we've also seen at times, and I always remember the 3 or 4 game stretch where the Bucks had all those receiver injuries, and it was just like, all right, we're going to build the whole offense out of Cade Otton. So like, he's an actual valid receiver and a guy that can play in line. I just think that's going to be pretty valuable when we get to the open market here as teams. Like, there are so many teams, no shock, that are, you know, McVay acolytes. These hear about like the Jags poking around tight ends, you know, wanting to get into this world a little bit as if they don't already have a bunch of pass catchers that they want to try to get activated. And then you hear about the Vikings too, although they weren't probably moving. I think the Vikings are interesting. They're probably going to move on from TJ Hockenson. Could they just get cheaper here by getting Cade Otton in the mix? Maybe. But yeah, I think he's somebody that I think just fits with. Njoku, same thing, where he could be a guy that is just to become this like true inline player. So yeah, a lot of guys I think are very interesting on this market. It's more, I like your inflection point where it's like, it's interesting. I think that's kind of how I describe the tight ends here too.
Yeah, I know Njoku's been to a Pro Bowl and there's Travis Kelce and stuff. Higbee's caught a bunch of touchdowns. It's more role players So it's more like, none of these guys who get signed are going to grab headlines, I don't think, like where it's going to be like, oh my God, that guy got paid this much and everything. But these are the ones that are going to have an impact on their team. Like these guys can mm-hmm. all, if they get to the right spot, like Njoku is better in line than he's gotten credit for. That's one of the craziest things about how he's developed as a pro, was that he was such a young, freaky athlete, and he turned into a better inline player. That's happened to a few guys. Josh Oliver, you just brought up Hockenson with the Vikings, but Josh Oliver, talking about why tight ends getting paid, he got paid last year, is a guy that was a freaky athlete that turned into a wide, gritty blocker. I would just think that archetype's very funny to me. It's like, oh, I don't have the skills for this. All right, block. It's like in the NBA, a guy that scored 28 a game, all of a sudden they get to the NBA, they're like, all right, I'm rebounding now and playing defense because I can't score like these guys do. So I think Njoku could be an interesting sign if the right team gets him. I'm glad you brought up the Jags, because that's another Charlie Kolar team. Like that, they, like you said, sniffing around tight ends, get that blocker, unlock Brent Strange a little bit. Strange willing to, scrap as a blocker too. But no, I like Njoku. I think that's I wouldn't really touch Higbee. He's been getting banged up. And Travis Kelce seems like he's only going to go to the Chiefs. So it's like, I didn't realize how much he got paid last year. That was actually a little surprise to me when I realized that they like gave each other a hometown discount, but it wasn't a discount. It was like a hometown bonus, which is not why you usually do the hometown signing. It's usually you get the discount for the team. Yeah. So that's the Chiefs right now. Isaiah Likely is what I would call a specific player. Would not like him for a lot of teams. He's just kind of funky. But again, get him into an interesting offense. Like, yeah, that they can make him work. They probably may be trying to re-sign him. I don't know. He's not going to be an inline guy, but he can kind of be a move blocker. You could do some cool stuff with him. And he's just kind of comes down with the football. He's has drops, but he kind of comes down with the football too. But I'll bring up my under the radar guys. And this is more because one team has both of them. And that's the Colts. And again, we're diving deep here. The Colts, they have two, Mo Alie-Cox and Andrew Ogletree. And I've always been of the believer that Andrew Ogletree has a little bit more to him than he has shown. I think it's just that because the Colts have had a bevy of tight ends, Jelani Woods was there as well. I think he's battled injuries. I think he had an off-field. Do you remember that name? I think he had an off-field thing as well. Yeah. Jelani Woods was the example of my theory with tight ends, just take the biggest, fastest, athletic guy and hopefully he figures it out. He's the downside. It's like, well, you still have to be able to play football too. Right. It's like, you still have there's a reason you win the third
dynasty rookie draft picks on Jelani Woods. So yeah, that's why I said that. I was like, oof.
I understand the argument though, because those are the guys.
It was not premium picks, that's for sure. So it's fine. But
but sometimes the theory's there. Third round flyers turn into Harold Fannin. And it's a lot of fun.
Exactly.
You just go, wee. But I think with what's cool about Mo Alie-Cox, I just brought up with why tight ends. He is a former basketball player. Talk about the big athletes that became a great
DCU's finest
monster blocker. Yes, he is. He's going to be 33 this year. Yeah, that's right. Virginia Commonwealth. Did they? No, that's Virginia Military. I was going to think Ben Wallace, but he's Virginia Military, I think. But Mo Alie-Cox at 33. But this is games played the last 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 seasons. 2021, 17 games played. 2022, 17 games played. 2023, 17 games played. 2024, 17 games played. 2025, 17 games played. I think he's durable. And that's a guy I wouldn't mind on a 1-year deal that we know what we're getting out of him. And he can be that he's just a true Y. He can do some stuff in the red zone. You can throw the ball with him on play action stuff. But if you're looking for that type of skill set, he's kind of the epitome of that. Well, Kolar is the younger version. He's 27. You can kind of get more on this prime and get a little bit more juice. I think if you know what you want, and you know what you're trying to get, Mo Alie-Cox is exactly there for you. Like the Broncos signing Mo Alie-Cox, I would really like. I know we talk about the Joker and everything, but they need better tight end blocking than what they've gotten. And I think he could be a good signing. And then his teammate Ogletree, I think he's got a little bit more juice to him and can also do some blocking, gritty stuff as well. But he would be a guy I would take a flyer on if I were a team. So just wanted to give him a little shout. Any closing thoughts?
Yeah,
on
watch
the tight
for the
ends?
Watch for the Eagles with some of these teams. You know,
oh,
some
great
shared,
call.
Shared DNA. They're going to that more. I mean, again, from like the Nick Sirianni part of it and Shane Steichen, there's that collective DNA. But also, Mannion's coming in there now. It seems like they're really they're change their stripes there offensively. That has been a pretty clear message.
And all three of their tight ends are free agents, I believe. So yeah, no, that's a great call. Yeah. Oh my God. Goddard went from like a solid blocker to like, I don't even want to try anymore because he's so banged up. And so it's just like, I can tell he's like, I'm going to save this for the catch. I'm not going to save like my 22 snaps for a play where I have to get gritty with an edge. And then Grant Calcaterra, all those guys, they get Grant into there too. So yeah, no, that's a great call. They could definitely use a like true Y like this, or maybe just double dip in some way, shape or form. All right, we're going to take our last break. And just like the combine, we're going to end with the offensive lineman. See you guys in a sec. All right, wrapping it up. Last section, the offensive line. We care about you guys. I know you say no one cares about you guys, even though you get drafted in the top 10. And we had 8 of you guys drafted in our last mock in the first round. And you guys get paid. Even if you just have a pulse, you get paid $20 million in free agency. Other than that, though, no one cares about the offensive lineman. I know. But we got some cool free agents, I would say. Yeah, actually, there are some cool free agents. We got Rashid Walker, left tackle from the Packers, who Packers tried to have a guy beat him out year after year after year, and he just kind of stayed there. I think he was a – Dan Moore got paid a lot of money last year, and I would say Walker's better than Dan Moore. That's how I look at Rashid Walker.
I would agree, yeah.
Like, he's league average left tackle. That's how I look at him, and that's going to get paid. There's not a lot of those guys hit free agency. David Edwards and Connor McGovern from the Bills, who I think you have to always talk about them as a pairing, like a tag team, but they're both free agents. I think they're very interesting signings. I would call them like kind of B plus starters. Connor McGovern, center from the Ravens, who they let go because they couldn't justify how free agency tags work. It's not just center, it's offensive line. So it's the high, so you basically would have to pay him like a top 5 tackle at center. And that's just not what you want to do. But the problem is the Ravens let him go. And at the same time, he's going to have a huge market, which they might have to pay that much anyway. So he seems like he is going to have a huge, huge market. Again, probably over $20 million. Braden Smith from the Colts had been paid, battled injuries, right tackle. I'm not going to bring up Cam Robinson because he came and start. And then Elijah Vera Tucker is a very fun kind of home run swing. I have to understand his injuries. It's been more often than not he's going to have an injury. But when he's out there, he has Pro Bowl level talent, has some guard tackle versatility as well. But interesting names here. But any that you wanted to touch on, Matt, or any fits that you like with the offensive line class?
Yeah, I agree. It's definitely a group that was got. I mean, hey, by the way, the offensive line, nobody loves you guys. We love the tackles so much that the Ravens can't, you know, put the 5th-year option on Tyler Linderbaum, can't franchise tag him because he's because they've screwed up the payment so much. He's too much. So yeah, I mean, we love the tackles enough that we've screwed the entire offensive line free agent market in that regard. But yeah, Linderbaum just seems like he's the one guy that it just feels like, okay, Raiders, whatever it takes, you know, good fit in the system. You've got more money than you could possibly spend. It makes way too much sense. It feels like whatever it takes, let's get Linderbaum to the Raiders. You get in with Mendoza right away, rookie year, veteran center. I know that's like an idea you're a big fan of. Out like obviously just a disastrous offensive line last year. You'll see what you do with some of those holdover guys. You know, does Jackson Powers Johnson go back to guard? Do they even care about Jackson Powers Johnson anymore? Because that was like, I think, 3 regimes ago now at this point that he was drafted by this team, because that's how much turnover that happens with the Raiders. It's always hard to remember those situations. But yeah, I mean, I think that's one to me that just stands out, like whatever it takes. The Raiders have more, there's so many teams that have more cap than that they could possibly know what to do with. And as much as we're saying like, oh, this is an interesting free agent market, it's not like there's a bunch of superstars out there. Linderbaum's not a perfect center by any means. Like him making top of the center market, he's probably not the best center in the NFL, but this is how free agency works. And I think spending the money on him is more justifiable than, yeah, like Dan Moore last year becomes one of like a monstrously paid left tackle. So makes sense to me. That's one that I think like the Raiders probably shouldn't not let happen.
I love the Linderbaum with the Raiders thing because that is just a perfect fit for Kubiak. You brought up the young quarterback pairing. God, that's one I haven't even, like, I think I kind of had the Bills guys in my head with them, with like McGovern and stuff, but like they got so much money too. I know the Chargers are a popular link as well.
They also have a lot of money too, though. That's the thing. They're right behind the Raiders in cap space, and Joe Ortiz was in the Ravens front office. So like those, but those two teams should just be competing, man. Like just push it. Just push that APY up so that the agent who doesn't respond to texts or whatever, whatever Eric DaCosta said or rap sheet said about his agent at the combine, whatever it was, you're going to get those two teams. He'll be responding to their texts, I bet.
Yeah, no, I'm sure he will. I mean, no, that's really funny you say that. Sorry, no, I had a story I was going to get into. I'm not going to get into it. But I did laugh last week. I think you were like, oh, I've been talking about this so much, I could tell you the top five teams with cap space off the top of my head. And we had a comment that says, I think it was on YouTube, that was like, oh, I want to do this. I want to see if I can do top 10. It was like they were like talking to themselves and like challenged themselves to see if they could do it as you talked about it. But I thought that was just really funny that someone was like, oh, that's a fun game. And it's like, I love our audience. So you guys get us. You play the same games I do. It's like you were bringing up the Texans run game stats, like on top of your head.
Like, oh yeah. Saying, like, I did a show a couple weeks ago where I sent like every free agent to the Titans. I'm like, what do you want me to do? They have almost $100 million in cap space, and they haven't re-signed any of their players in forever because the
Titans are. Commanders have 86 mil. The Raiders have 85. Chargers are in fourth, 84. Jets. Seahawks have a lot of cap space, which is also interesting. That's a like Linderbaum to the Seahawks. That would actually be a little fun one. Yeah, I didn't even think about that one. Bengals got cap space. They won't spend it. Rams actually have a decent amount of cap space. When you got all day 3, day 2 defensive players, that helps. I have a perfect example of this too, is when I was with the Raiders, they had a ton of money because they stunk then too. And they signed Kelechi Osemele and Rodney Hudson year after year. And Rodney Hudson immediately came in. I want to say that was 2015. When he came in, it was just a total boost effect on everybody. Same pairing that he had with Derek Carr, and where it was just like, oh, helped him out. They learned their communication. I've always been a big believer in this battery, something that comes from my dad as well, something that comes from just other guys I've learned from. I just think it helps out a young quarterback that even if they are smart and can handle things, it just takes a load off. Like, there's just so – like, yeah, when you're beaten down on a team and everything's going great, it's fine. But once you get into nitty-gritty in the playoffs and you're playing – I mean, insert defense now, because it's not just Spags and Bowles. Like, look at any defense right now that's running all these funky third down stuff. Like, yeah, that's why you need these centers to take a load off so the quarterback can operate and do things better and cleaner. Linderbaum, I get it. It's like he's more of a zone guy, pass protection stuff. He kind of let go, you know, like guys can kind of bull rush him a little bit, but he knows what he is and kind of mitigate that. You're signing him to boost everything else in your offense. So him and McGovern. Him and Edwards, you know, for Edwards from the Bills. Like, I think all these guys are good starters that teams can use these guys. And there's plenty. I could bring up AFC contender after AFC contender. Like, not just the teams that we think of, like the Ravens and everything, or the Chiefs, but like the Jags, the Texans, the Chargers. Like I said, these teams that are on the cusp in a wide open AFC. Mahomes might miss a month or two. The Bills are going to be reloading and figuring out what they are. The Ravens, I think, are like close to like just being right back in it. they're nailing this offseason so far, and they're very close to doing it again. I know people get annoyed. Oh, Ravens praise. Look what happened last time. But no, trust me, this actually looks different. These other teams, though, that can take that little half step to get over the top, like these are the signings that I think that if they can nail it and thread the needle, I don't know how the Jags situation is, but Texans, Chargers, this could put them over the top is these types of signings. Speaking of kind of put them over the top, or maybe just, you know, fill out the lines here. I don't know what metaphor I'm going. We're wrapping up the show. We got a 2-hour freaking pod. Sorry. Under the radar offensive lineman that you want to throw in here to cap off this pod, Matt.
I really liked watching Cade Mays with the Panthers this year. Like when this I would tune in on them, he's a good under the radar signing. Shouldn't be too expensive either. I kind of think I'd rather say, and you know, we talked a lot about the Panthers run game last year and like some of Canales' ideas about how they were going to go from more of a pure zone team in 24 to more of a varied run game. And I think that generally was successful last year. And I think Cade Mays actually being pretty massive as a center actually helped them accomplish getting some more gap scheme stuff in there and more like crack toss run. I think actually that's what I'd rather see him in, that type of run game, because he is such a bigger body, a little bit heavier footed. But I think a good pass protector overall. Probably would rather see him in a gap based run game. So maybe a team like the Lions, you know, that obviously I think was reeling in the wake of Frank Ragnow retiring and never quite figured out that position. I think they could just go ahead and you know, slap that Band-Aid on it. It might be even more than that. A team like Arizona, if they're going to more of a duo run game, as we've mentioned with LaFleur coming from McVay, and like you mentioned that he was a big part of changing that run game up. So yeah, he's just an under the radar guy that I think is not a household name, but I really did like watching him when we were tuning into the Panthers last year.
Yeah, no, that's a great call. And talk about the size too. Like, that's the thing. There's different flavors of center. There's kind of these undersized speed guys, which has kind of been a traditional center, but then there's big burly guys. And as teams move to more duo and gap scheme, these are the type of guys that are great in that. So that's a great shout. I really like that one. Like, that was the one that got me going when I started seeing your under the radar guys. I was like, yeah, a little Cade Mates talk. Let's talk about him for a minute. No, a couple of mine are just more kind of, there's filler guys like the Browns, like Wyatt Teller and stuff, like the injuries and stuff. But like Isaac Sumalo from the Steelers, actually went to a Pro Bowl 2 years ago, which actually surprised me. You know, he's past 30. Guards tend to age fairly well as long as they, you know, they take care of themselves. So just a team that maybe needs just a 1-2 year guy to kind of shore up that line, just has that one blemish on their line. I think he could be a really good kind of filler guy, like be a good starter. Like when even this year, he was a good starter. I think he had one of the lowest kind of pressure rates allowed amongst all guards. But he's a guy that kind of like a smart team could sign him to kind of put you over the top. And just kind of fill out that last spot along your offensive line if you just needed a guard, or you need two more starters, and we want to draft one. Okay, then we get one more kind of vet right here. He's perfect for that. And then a couple tackles, Jermaine Illuminor from the Giants. Again, another guy that's past 30, but I thought he played well at right tackle last year.
He was legit good last year.
Again, I have to bring up how good the Giants' O-line looked last year. I thought you could see it sometimes how long Dart had to sit in the pocket, but that was as much as the run game success as Scataboo and Dart and Tracy running, was their old line was just burying guys and double teams were moving guys, and Andrew Thomas was playing really, really good football when he came back. So I thought he was another guy for a starting quality tackle. Not a lot of these guys hit free agency. I think he'll be able to stay on the field, and again, if you just expect it for 1 year, that's not the worst thing to go after in free agency. And then the last one I want to bring up, because he was a kind of a pet favorite of mine, kind of, I wouldn't say forgot about him, but he kind of has been a backup for the Panthers for a few years. But I had to play this year. It was Josh Nyman, just as a stopgap guy. Like I mentioned him as a Bears potential guy, but anyone that, again, needs a body that can play both tackle spots, he would be one, and he could legitimately play left tackle. Not saying great, but if you just passing you by, not making the position a turnstile that wrecks the whole offense, you can just get through the games with him. It's like a high-end backup quarterback kind of thing. That's how I looked at kind of Josh Nyman. It's just one of those under the radar guys. There's a few more, like Ethan Pochich from the Browns is another kind of cut. He's 30, but if you're looking for a center, John Simpson, who's very a burly blocker in the run game, especially, has his limitations kind of come up. And I think he, health wise, how was he last year? Oh no, he's started 17 games the last three seasons, but it's one of these where there's a reason he's going to be on potentially his fourth team. And I'm not going to be ignorant of that. Like, you know, you just got to kind of keep an eye on that. Like, there's a reason these teams aren't always going, we got to bring them back. So, but John Simpson's another one that you can be nice, like a solid starter there with kind of a little bit of pop to him. But that's the O-line. And that's the offensive free agents for the 2026 free agency cycle. Thanks for joining me, Matt, for almost 2 hours. That was you could have gotten two episodes in. I'm trying to think what show. What show are you watching right now? Did you even say that?
I'm watching Homeland right now, actually, when I'm doing my walks in the morning.
Catching up on Homeland, huh?
Well, all it's kind of relevant, actually, if you think about it.
It's relevant, but huh?
No, it's relevant.
It's not a documentary. You
know, I know. I typically, when I fly, I only watch things that I previously watched before. And so when we were doing Super Bowl Combine, I was rewatching like the first couple of seasons, which I had already seen. And I stopped watching it, I think, around like the end of season three. Now I'm like, well, I need something to watch in the morning when I'm walking on the treadmill. So I'm powering through season four now of Homeland. So sick. Very relevant.
Hey, you're watching Homeland. I'm watching Archer, the animated show. I'm rewatching that. Seen it's been it? A while. Yeah. Season two is phenomenal. We're watching Archers. Yeah, which I guess got some relevance too. But also, yeah, I did the same thing you do. I wanted a familiar movie on the flight to Indy. So I watched Big Trouble in Little China. Have you ever seen that? Carpenter movie? No. It's an 80s.
I've literally never heard of it.
I could see you either really liking it or just being like, what did you just recommend to me? But it's great. Watch for a few dollars more on the last night, which is great. Clint Eastwood, Sergio Leone movie. And then what was the third movie I watched this week? Sorcerer, which is an old 70s movie, which is phenomenal. Under the radar movie. But anyways.
Well, as soon as I watch Twisters.
You want to talk Twister?
Both the Twister.
Oh, yeah.
As soon as I see the Twisters, I'll check those out.
it's a perfect turn your brain off. Maybe have a bottle of wine with it, you know. A Camus, you know. No, actually, no. Twister's not worthy of Camus. Actually, I take that back. It's not worthy of Camus. But we're closing it out today on Football 301. I'll be back on Thursday to preview the free agency for the defense with Charles, which should be a lot of fun. I get to hear from him finally. Maybe some snow melted around him. But I'm Nate Tice. You can find me at Nate_Tice wherever you get your social media. That is Matt Harmon. You can find him at Matt_BYB. Anything you want? You got the fantasy forecast live in, I think, like 20 minutes. So I'm sorry. Yeah, but anything else you got going on this week?
I'm going to be doing some free agency content here for Yahoo. I also posted, I'm starting to post my free agent profiles on Reception Perception. So I've got five up right now.
Oh, great.
Please subscribe and read. Make it worth my time that I charted Wandale Robinson in the Giants offense. Hey, Wandale, you know what? They had him run a lot of fun post routes. So I'll be breaking those down in detail if that's what you like.
Yeah, make sure you check out Matt's stuff over there. It's great. And he's got about 40 prospects to get through. So that'll be fun to see those trickle in the next couple of weeks. But make sure to subscribe to us here at Football 301. Follow us, rate us wherever you get your podcast. We'd really appreciate that. And leave some comments as well. Always love to see those. Watch us on YouTube as well as on the Yahoo Sports YouTube channel. You can catch out the live shows there whenever we do those, but also plenty of great Yahoo content. All these Football 301 shows there, clips galore, all the good stuff, especially as we're in basketball, baseball starting. Olympics wrapped up. The Olympics coverage was great that we had as well. But yeah, make sure to subscribe there as well. Thanks to Stone, Austin, Masson, everyone behind the scenes for making us look and sound good. So good to see a few of you guys last week, including producer Colin. But thank you to everybody for listening. See you guys next time.